Unbelievable. Yeah, I used to call Mary Kay technologically handicapped, but then that wasn't politically correct. So now I just call her technologically challenged. But you know, I mean, have you ever experienced that? We're in the middle of a series called Modern Family. And you know, it's so amazing to me how as we talk about marriage, there are so many misconceptions of what marriage is. I mean, that could have been taken right out of our own home. No offense, you'll hear I've blown it many times, as did he. But anyways, I want to tell you that, I mean, marriage is tough work. In fact, and it's totally unexpected because what, I don't know about you, but some of you grew up in homes where you grew up with some very unrealistic expectations about marriage. I did. Well, in fact, I would suggest all of us grew up with unrealistic expectations about marriage, just some of them bad and some of them good, but they're unrealistic in many ways. For me, marriage was this concept. If I look back at my expectations, and I know it's a long time ago, but I still have a good memory. I can think about my expectations before I got married. And I would like you to think of what your expectations were of marriage, whether you are married. If you're not married, what are your expectations today? But for me, it was like this. Man meets woman, they fall in love and want to have sex. Man and woman get married and have sex, and then man and woman grow it together close in marriage and enjoy sex, and man and women have children through sex, and then man and woman raise kids, still have sex. Man and women graduate their kids through life and all those stages of life and still have sex, and then man and woman enjoy retirement and sex, and then lastly, man and woman die after sex. I mean, you know, something that was... I mean, those kinds were my expectations, and I need to tell you that life didn't meet those expectations. Now, I'll let you figure out which of those expectations didn't come true, but the reality is that we all have these expectations, and I can't tell you how many times people have come into my office or come and talk to me and said, yeah, I no longer love the one I'm with. I don't love her. I don't love him anymore. And I'm reminded of this song by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. You may remember, or you may have heard it for those who are younger. Well, there's a road to the stand up, and the eagle flies with the dove. And if you can't be with the one you love, honey, love the one you with, love the one you with. Okay, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you with. That's a terrible phrase. I got that. I mean, there's terrible theology and philosophy and all of the principles involved. But the reality is there's some truth to it too. That we do have an opportunity to love the one we're with. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how we love the one we're with. Because I know in a group of this size, there are people who don't love the one you're with. And I would suggest, and that fact I've learned, that love is not what I thought it was. That the problem was my concept of love and lust and intimacy and all that stuff, we're all screwed up. So I want to talk today about what love really is from a biblical concept. Because I think God had a pretty good perspective on love and marriage when he created marriage. The first thing I think you need to realize about love, and this is what I've learned, is that there's certain reality of relationships. And the first reality of relationships is that it takes hard work to learn to love the one you're with. You see, we have this concept that love is something we just kind of fall into. You know, it's kind of like foo-foo dust. You give it to somebody, oh, yes. You know, that is not love. That's lust, or that's infatuation, or call it whatever you want, but that isn't love. Love is hard work. In fact, if you go to Genesis chapter 2, first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 2, God just created marriage, first marriage. And he says this, Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. For this reason, a man will leave his mother and father to be united with his wife, and they will become one flesh. So what's the big deal here? Well, you got to understand that it's the old concept of called leaving and cleaving, that for there to really be love, the first reality of relationships is there has to be a leaving of what you thought you knew and a leaving of your expectations and a developing. You know, a man will leave his father and mother. Where are most of our expectations created? In our family of origin. Most of us grew up developing expectations unconsciously. We didn't know they were consciously being developed, but they were being developed in us. And God says, you know, in this first marriage, he says, the first thing you got to do is leave
the things that you were, the expectations that you were created with. And you got to create a whole new set of, you got to love and then you got to learn to, you got to leave and then you got to learn to love your spouse from a new concept. And marriage is like that. It's hard work because you have to learn to leave what was behind. You know, we got married and I found so many things that I expected her, Mary Kay, to do and to be were created in my head or in the home that I was raised in. And you know, ironically, she had a different head than I had. I mean, that's kind of a surprise. And she had a different home, for sure, than I was raised in. And so, ironically, she had a different set of expectations. And yet, both of us had to leave those expectations. They were so clearly portrayed. This was probably the third year in our marriage. Classic case, you know. In my home, you grew up at Christmas time, and you wrap the presents, and you put them out, you know, under the tree, and for weeks, you know, you're shaking the kids, you're shaking the presents, trying to figure out what they are. Well, Mary Kay's home, she grew up with a different tradition, you see. And I'll never forget, I came home from a meeting one night, and Mary Kay was in there wrapping all these presents. This is a couple weeks before Christmas. She had all these presents wrapped all over the tree, you know, or all over the bedroom. She had all them wrapped up. And so I scoop them up and start taking them out to the Christmas tree. She goes, whoa, 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 where are you going with those presents? Oh, I'm going to go put them under the tree. No, 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 you don't do that. You hide the presents in the closet. Kids don't know. And on Christmas Eve, Santa brings the presents. Or, you know, we put them out there on Christmas Eve. I said, well, that's crazy. There's no fun in that. I mean, come on, we got to test, you know, tempt the kids and do all those kind of things for 2 or 3 weeks here, you know. Well, we got in this major argument over whether you put the presents under the tree or you don't put them under the tree. You know, folks, that was just the leaving kind of thing. The reason she had different expectations was because of the traditions she grew up in. It turned into such a fight that I finally just went to bed. I was angry. I went to bed, got up the next morning. Mary Kay, being the wise woman she is, she solved the problem completely. My presents were under the tree. No one else's were under the tree. You know, but I mean, that's expectations. You got to learn to leave what the expectations you have. You got to learn to leave your traditions. You got to learn to leave the things that were behind you. And for me, any relationship requires hard work. In fact, there's what I would suggest 3 stages of relationships. The first one is most of us get involved in relationships, especially as we're young. We get into relationships. We try to get the love we need from other people. Okay, here I'm in a dating relationship with you, and the really reason I'm in this dating relationship is so I can get the love I want. That's the reason we're in that relationship. And that's okay, because that's where most relationships start. If they stop there, we're in trouble. By the way, and a lot of marriages never get beyond that stage, and so they're just trying to get their own love from those other people. They keep draining and sucking each other dry. So there's a second stage we go into. The second stage is we actually begin to love the other person so that we can get love. You see, we learn that I can get love if I give love. And so I'm going to give love in order that I receive it. And that works for a little while. But, you know, eventually when we give it and we don't get it, what happens? Well, I shut that down. That didn't work, you know. And so then we shut down and both people shut down and the marriage shuts down. And again, a lot of relationships get stuck in that stage, even in marriage. And the only reason I love you is so I can get love. But biblically, I would suggest to you that the concept comes to the third stage of relationships. And healthy relationships, healthy marriages develop this third stage. And that is you simply love the other person, period. It's an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. It's I realize that you're imperfect, just like I am imperfect, and I'm going to love you unconditionally with no expectations in return. Those are what I call the realities of a relationship, and it's in this last stage that we find true fulfillment and we find real love, because we've left all of our expectations at the door, and we've now begun to create a concept where I'm going to cleave to you unconditionally. I'm going to love you. I'm going to become one flesh with you. But there's a second point I want to talk about this morning, and it is not enough just to understand these realities. There's a second part that says you need to know your spouse. In fact, if we keep reading in Genesis chapter 2, we read in verse 25 this verse, "But the man and the wife were naked." See, I just talk about sex a lot. The Bible does. You know, so man and wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. Well, what does that mean? Well, it says basically, you know, they were totally open. If you look at that context, they were totally open with each other. They had nothing to hide. I mean, they were naked. They weren't hiding any of their roles or any of those other things, you know. And they were not ashamed. They were not ashamed. And they knew each other. In fact, the word that later in the next chapter, verse 3, which says Adam knew Eve, or, you know, they had sex, the word there is he gnoskoed her. He knew her. Gnosko stands for know. That's why there's a K-N-O-W when you spell know. You never can figure that out. Well, now it's because it comes from the Greek word gnosko. It says Adam knew Eve so well in sexual intercourse. You see, I would suggest that Adam and Eve were able to build a healthy relationship. They had plenty of issues, if you continue reading. But the interesting, they were able to build some healthy relationship because they knew each other intimately. They did. They really knew each other. Now, what does it mean to know your spouse? Well, let me suggest to you that, let me ask you first. How many of you play golf? Raise your hand. Keep your hands up. Raise them. I don't mean play well. I mean you just play at it, okay? Just raise. Okay, how many of you, keep your hands up, how many of you have never read a book, watched a video, or had coaching? Continue to keep your hand up. If you've read a book or read an article or been coached, keep your hand up. Well, there's a couple of you. Well, you're probably not good golfers, but anyways, you may be. But you, usually, to be really good at golf, you need help. Golf is a non-athletic sport. I never can figure it out, but it's a tough sport. How many of you have ever had a mechanic work on your car? Raise your hand. Or someone else work on your car. All right. We all do, all right? Because we're not experts in cars either. Well, believe me, your spouse, if you haven't figured it out, is much more complicated than golf for your cars. And the reality is, if you're going to really learn to make your marriage work, you're going to really get to know, gnosko, your spouse. It's going to happen because you've studied her or him. You've read. You've had others fix them, if you will. Work on them. And work on yourself. I mean, you know, you're only going to have a healthy marriage as you, in fact, spend time to really get to know your spouse. Verse 25, you know, in Genesis says they knew each other intimately. And I got to tell you, most of this is a guy problem. Not always. I always kind of hesitate here because sometimes it's the other way. But most of the time, guys don't know their wives nearly as well as their wives know them. You know, in fact, I ask guy, you know, what size dress does your wife wear? Well, somewhere between a 2 and an 8, you know. Well, what's the difference between a 1, 3, 5, and 7 dress and a 2, 4, 6, and 8 dress? Most guys don't know that. Ask your wife that. That's a good question to ask her. Why are some women even size and ones not? Because some women are odd and some women are even. That doesn't know it. You need to ask your wife that. But you know, most guys have no idea, but yet the wife will know all the sizes for the husband. You see, women are usually better at knowing their husbands than we guys at knowing our wives. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, how well, what are the needs my wife has? Do I really know her needs? Do I know the language of love she speaks? Do I know her personality? Do I know her? Do I know things about her that only I know? Or do I just approach this spouse, this husband, this wife thing in a casual way? Do I expect myself just to fall in love? Or am I really willing to put the work in required to leave, to cleave, and to become one? Because it doesn't happen naturally. It doesn't happen. I wish, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time someone said to me that, you know, they no longer love the one they're with, I'd be rich. I wouldn't be preaching this morning. I'd be doing so much. Yeah, but the reality is we really only come to love the one we're with through difficult work of learning to study our spouses and get to know them. But you know, it's not enough just to study our spouses. It's not enough just to know them. We really need to learn to do something with that. It brings us to the third point. We really need to meet the needs of our spouse. You see, after we know those needs, after we really study them and we get to know them, we really need to seek to meet those needs. Paul says, he's writing the church at Ephesus, and he's writing to them about the mystery, in fact, of marriage and the church and so forth. And he reads this, and he writes this passage. And I want to read it to you. It's kind of a long passage, but hang with me. In Ephesians chapter 5, he says this about the church and about marriage. Husbands, you need to love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands, you ought to love your wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds it and cares for it, just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, the verse is kind of, you know, I hope you've
heard this a moment ago. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united with his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Now, this is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each of you must also love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect the husband.
You know, Paul there gives us a whole lot of insight into and what it means to love. He says, you know, you can talk about love. It's not some mushy, fuzzy feeling. It's being willing like Christ. He died for the church. And I know you guys. I know you know, it's tough guys. We're gonna give our lives. That was the Tim Allen thing for some of you missed it. But that's all you're going to get, Tim Allen. But, you know, you guys, you think it's really a macho thing? I'd throw myself in front of the bus and throw my wife all the way and take the hit for her, you know, and save her life. And few of us are going to have the opportunity to die for our wives in that regard. But I would suggest you will have many opportunities to die for your wife today by denying your own desires and serving her. You see, that's what most of us are going to have the opportunity with as husbands, is to daily deny the things that we feel we need, to die daily, die a slow death, so that our wives can live and flourish. That's what love is all about, is being able to say, I'm gonna know your needs so well, I'm going to be willing to give up of my own needs, to give up my own desires so that I can meet yours. That's love, folks, and that's the hard work. Now, it's interesting. Paul also says in that last verse, verse 33, that, and wives, you should learn to respect your husbands. You see, I just tell guys, you're to love your wives unconditionally. It's that third stage of relationships. You're to love her whether she's lovable or not. Doesn't matter whether she meets your need or not. You're to love her. That's what love is all about. But it also says, wives, respect your husbands. I find it really interesting that Paul would say that because, in fact, research today done by the University of Wisconsin and some of Minnesota, it's really some interesting research that's come out of there showing that men would rather be respected than loved. I mean, you ask a guy, would you rather be loved and not respected or respected and not loved? And 80% of guys would rather be respected and not loved because we have this real deep need for respect as men. I don't know, maybe it's a testosterone thing, whatever it is. But we have this need for respect. And Paul identifies that way back 2,000 years ago. God said through Paul, wives, you need to respect your husbands. Now, I hear, and as I talk with wives, I say, yeah, I respect my husband when he acts respectfully, but I'm not about to respect him when he doesn't act respectful. That isn't what Paul says. Just like a husband is to love the wife unconditionally, the wife is to unconditionally respect her husband and to be respectful. Wow. You see, that's hard work, too. It's not easy for wives to respect their husbands when their husband doesn't act in a respectful manner. But you know, that's what love is. In fact, Paul in Titus chapter 2, verse 4 says this. He's talking about wives and women. He says, they can train the younger women to love their husbands and their children. You see, he says that love is something you can teach people. It isn't a foo-foo dust experience. It isn't something you just fall into. It isn't something uncontrollable that either comes or doesn't come in your relationship or leaves when you know, the feeling's gone. No, he says, you can actually train, older women can teach younger women to love their husbands. How do they do that? Well, they teach them and they train them how to respect them, even when they don't act respectful. So what does it mean? What does it mean to really serve your spouse and to meet their needs? Well, there's a whole bunch of different ways, and we can spend 10 weeks. This is only a four-week series, so I can't come back. Sorry, PJ, I just got it covered in 1 week. So let me just give you a couple quick handles on ways you can love your spouse, respect your spouse. And the first one is to serve them in the area of their personality. And I'm going to use just one little personality. In fact, it's on your card, your connection card. There's a website you can go to and take a free assessment. Both of you and your spouse can take it, and it gives you some graphs. And let me tell you, there's one way to meet your spouse's needs, and that's in a personality. Some of you are high D kind of people. Now, I'm going to use the DISC, the D-I-S-N-C. If you've not been exposed to it, I'll give you just a quick intro in it. The D is the need for control or power or to be in charge. And some of us are high D people. I'm a high D person. And the interesting thing is, it's not like we're on a power trip or, you know, we got an ego problem. It's that God has wired us in a way that we just like to be in control. And that's okay, because if no one was in control, nothing would ever get done.
I mean, just as you need a leader here in PJ to pull off worship, someone has to be in control. And the same thing, God wires us in some ways. Some of us are high D people, and that's okay. And we have a need to be in control. And so sometimes it's kind of nice to have someone who appreciates those needs and we meet those needs and respect those needs in our lives. Others of us are what we call high I kinds of people. Their I stands for influence. We're the ones that just love being the party. We love talking with people. We love hanging out with folks. We love, you know, we're impulsive. I can stand for impulsive because we just like hanging out and living with people. Life is meant to be lived in the context of a few people, and we do that continually. And you know the high I people. They're just fun to be with. They may never get anything done. They frustrate the D's, but that's okay. You know, and it is interesting as we go through this to see how God knows how you're wired, and he also often puts you together with someone who's wired in a much different way. Yeah. Because the S stands, the D-I-S, the S stands for steadiness or stability. It does not stand for surprises, folks. The S people do not like to be surprised. Okay, now I got to tell you, I'm a D and I'm an I. So I like having fun. I like to have in control. I like to be going to parties, you know, those kind of things. My wife, she's an S. So what does it say? It says she likes things to be predictable and to fit together and to have a nice plan. And, you know, I'm the impulsive one. So I can't tell you, I mean, how many times I would call her, you know, especially when after we got married, and say, honey, come on, let's go out for dinner tonight. You know, this is before kids. Let's just go out to dinner tonight. We can't. Why can't we? Well, we don't know where we're going to go. Well, we'll find a place. I'll make up mine. We'll get in the car. We'll start headed out. We'll find some place. Oh, but we don't have any coupons. You know, and it's like, oh. So, you know, I found out that this is the first week of marriage. Oh, what have I done here? You know, I found out that if I was going to ask her out for dinner, it had to happen 2-3 hours before that. I mean, I had to give her plenty of time to prepare for it because as an S, they like those kinds of things. Then there's C. The C stands for cautiousness, or it's actually compliance to high standards. C people like things to be right, and they like things to be wrong, and there's a right way to do it. They don't like things to be wrong, excuse me, but they're well aware when things are not right, and they call them wrong. But C people are very precise people, very exact people. And you know those kind of people. Every hair is in place. They, you know, their house is immaculate. They're the high C. You can usually tell C people when you meet them because they would never sweat in front like PJ does. I mean, just they won't do that stuff. Okay? But, I mean, C people, they have their lives together. Or at least they want everyone to think they have their lives together. Now, you can take this D and this I and this S and this C, and you can take it to unhealthiness. You can have a control freak for a D. You can have a people pleaser for an I. You can have a obsessive, you know, compulsive stuck person as an S, and OCD as a C. But the reality is, none of those things are bad. They're just different. And God wires us in a way to complement each other often. And so often, I would suggest you'll find you're married to someone who's quite different than you. The problem is, if we're not willing to serve each other in those persons, those personality differences, it can cause major, major problems. In fact, in our premarital counseling, Mary Kay and I went through premarital counseling 6 months worth. Primarily because it was our Baptist church that required it to do that. But reality was Mary Kay had been married before. And 50% of first marriages fail, 75% of second marriages fail. 85% of third marriages, by the way. It's not like we learn from our mistakes. We tend to repeat them even more and more if you can look at those statistics. So we went through 6 months of counseling, and the reality was the counselor, who was kind of a nerdy guy, you know, anyways, he just told me at one point during the premarital, he says, you know, there's going to come a time when you're going to wish you hadn't married Mary Kay. I was like, me? Come on. I'm married. This is my woman, my main squeeze. You know, I love this woman. I wouldn't be marrying her if I thought there was going to be a time when I wouldn't want to be married to her. He said, no, they'll come. Don't worry. I'll never forget the time it came. Because I got a call Saturday morning. I used to play basketball. I know it's kind of hard for some of you to imagine, short guy like me, but, you know, I used to play some basketball. And guys called me Saturday morning. Come on, we're going to meet down the courts. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Yeah, I'll be right there. Hung up the phone. Mary Kay, she says, where are you going? I said, we're just going to go play some ball. She said, I thought I had some other plans for today. I thought maybe we could have some fun, like cleaning the house or doing yard work or something. I don't know what it was, something like that. But that's her idea of fun, you know. And I'll never forget thinking in my head, I wish I hadn't got married. And instead of being scared that I was headed to the divorce courts, I remember the words of Chuck Serling, my premarital counselor, when he said, when you wish you hadn't got married, that's the time that real love begins to develop. Because that's the time when you make an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. And that's the time when you begin to appreciate her for the unique ways that God has wired her, much different than me. Now, there's another way you can look at your wife, just by personality, or I would suggest the last way is the language of love. Because you see, all of us were raised in environments where we were taught or we learned or for whatever reason, who knows how, but we all learned love, to hear love in different ways. And so often when people come to me and they say, I don't feel loved anymore, and they would both would say they don't feel loved anymore, I would be convinced that, no, they really do love each other. But they're speaking different languages. It was like one was saying they loved them in Spanish and the other one didn't understand Spanish because they just never understood love from each other. So what's the language of love your wife or your husband speaks or hears? You see, there's six different ways, and I'll go through them very quickly. One is time. See, some people only feel loved when you spend time with them. You know, just sit beside me. Just walk with me. Just sit in the car with me. Go with me places. I feel loved when you're with me. Come over, and we'll just read a book together. You know, it's not a lot of fun for some of us, but it's just, we're going to spend time together. That's all you have. That's what's important. We'll go shop together. We'll do these kinds of things. Time. Others, it's touch, though. They only feel loved when they're touched. You know, it can be holding hands. It can be hugging. It can be kissing. It can be lying next to each other. Whatever it may be, there's some physical kind of touch that has to take place for me to feel loved. And see, if we don't appreciate that about our spouse, if we don't appreciate the language that they hear, then we're in trouble. The third language that some people hear is service. You know, this is Mary Kay's love language. You know, if I'm going to love her, I need to serve her. Now, what does that mean? Well, you know, it took me about probably 8 to 10 years of marriage to figure out that when I feel love, I feel like I really, really love Mary Kay, I'd want to go over and hug her and grab her and throw her on the couch and, well, you know, whatever. And I mean, that was my concept of love. But you know what? She didn't feel loved that way. The language of love she heard is, if I feel loved, she'd want me to vacuum the house, clean the dishes, you know, do those kinds, go to the grocery store. And so it was a real, real work of, you know, of my life to say, okay, when I feel loved, when I feel that just urging up within me, I got to grab the vacuum sweeper. I mean, that's, believe me, folks, that is a whole rewiring of my circuits. But that's the language of love she hears. And it may be your spouse, and I don't, you know, it could be those. It could be the language of trinkets. I mean, some of you are married to people who just are trinket junkies. You know, just give me something. I know it may not be, then that's be expensive, but it could be flowers or candy or ceramics. I don't care. Those little things that sit in those glass curios things. You know, whatever. Just, whatever it is. Love me in my language. Give me things. It may be the next one, which is talk. I know talk is cheap, but I'm a cheap lover here, man. Just tell me I love you. You know, tell me I love you. Tell me you mean a lot to me. Speak the words to me. Let me hear it. Now, for those of you who are married to this kind of a person, here's what you do. You go to a Hallmark store, and you walk up and down the card aisles, and you just memorize the front pages of all those cards, and you come home and you speak those words to your spouse. Don't do the humorous card aisles. That's not, or even the song ones. You just, I mean, the idea is they just want to hear they're loved in so many different ways. And you need to learn to do that. Is it work? Yeah, because it won't be natural, no doubt. This is the last one. I call it testing. Some of us only feel loved, and this happens to be my language, ironically. We only feel loved when you challenge us, when you test me in some way. I mean, I feel loved when people say, hey, here's a joke, I bet you don't can't, or here's a riddle you can't figure out. It's sick, but there are some of us who feel that way. I mean, that's how we feel valued and esteemed. So the reality is, obviously, Mary Kay and I speak and hear entirely different languages. And so it took years of work, of leaving our own expectations and cleaving to learn to love each other. So in closing, what do we do with a message like this? Let me suggest that we've all been raised in environments to expect to hear love spoken in certain ways. We had expectations of what that relationship would look like. And I would suggest that this morning God's calling you to leave some of your own expectations and to stop loving a person so that you'll receive love and to start serving that person unconditionally, to start respecting that person unconditionally, to start loving them in the ways that they feel loved. Our next steps are some steps you can take this next week. I think we'll help you in that process. My prayer is that today is the beginning of a journey, or at least a continuation of a journey, of you learning to love the one you're with through hard work. Let's stand and let me have a word of prayer.
God would love you. And I know you love us, and that's why you've given us this word from your word. Lord, you've given us some insights, tremendous insights that taken me years to learn, and I'm still learning. I still blew it. I blew it this week. But Father, I pray that you will help me learn that marriage is tough work, and that work encompasses learning to get to know my wife, continuing to know her as she continues to grow and change. It's not like I knew her once and she's that same way. Lord, she's changing. And the same with me. And then as I've learned to get to know her and some uniquenesses, realize that you've called me to serve her in the areas of those uniquenesses. And that is what love is all about. And that's the context that now, 33 years later, I am truly beginning to understand love, what love really is. And the quality of love I have now in my relationship is so much deeper than I would have ever dreamed or imagined. And I am loved by a woman who knows me so much better than I would have ever expected. But it's come as a result of working through these principles these last few years. Lord, we love you. For you continue to cause our love for you to grow and be shown in our love for each other, specifically our spouse.